Thank you, Marion, and good afternoon, distinguished guests and ladies and gentlemen. In fact, I think you're all very distinguished, because I think I know most of you, so as I've been said, I'm distinguished. It's only fair to say that you're distinguished. And certainly the topic today is one that I've had a great passion for, and coming to government does not mean I've changed my spots. I was a very strong advocate of planning reform in local government, and when I was in local government, I was a strong advocate of planning reform in government. So I at least can be said to be consistent in my approach. Today I wish to outline the planning reform agenda being undertaken by my agency, the Department of Planning, and that's in the context of the growth challenges facing the state. In the context, today I'm also going to outline the main reform priorities being tackled by the department and some of the delivery challenges we face. I'm going to use the word challenge a lot, and certainly they are challenges. Looking back over the last 3 to 4 years, and also in terms of my past life in local government, the state's planning and other approval processes, including environmental and mining approvals, have clearly been under strain as they struggle to cope with strong economic and population growth. Also, dealing with significant regional development and increasing community expectations to deliver sustainable development. Looking forward, the current economic climate creates uncertainty, but we do know that at some point, development will pick up, and we in government, as well as in the private sector, must be prepared. This downturn gives us the opportunity to improve the quality and timeliness of approvals processes. But it's important that the reform also improves planning outcomes. The focus of reform should equally be about improving the livability of Perth, as seen in that image on the screen, and Western Australia's regional centres. Improving livability is a core objective of both my agency and the Committee of Perth, who is co-hosting this event, and also the government. I'm going to briefly detour into the government's framework, in which the agenda for planning reform occurs. The department is, of course, a public sector agency, established to provide technical advice and administrative services to the West Australian Planning Commission and to the government via the Minister for Planning. The Commission is a statutory authority, and its roles and responsibilities are outlined in the 2005 Planning and Development Act. Functions of the Commission include advising the Minister and planning for the coordination and promotion of land use, infrastructure, including transport planning and the land development in the state in a sustainable manner. It is the peak land use planning authority in this state. Both the Development and the Commission report to the Minister for Planning, the Honourable John Day. The Commission has common interests with a number of other statutory authorities, such as the Environmental Protection Authority, the Heritage Council and the Swan River Trust, to name some. The Department in its role assisting with land use, transport and land development coordination cooperates with a wide range of state agencies and state enterprises, from the Department of Environment and Conservation to the Water Corporation, our redevelopment authorities, the Regional Development Commissions, and of course, the private sector. The Department and the Commission also have strong relationships with local government. Local government comes in for significant criticism, and I have first-hand knowledge of that, but it's often the front line in the delivery of planning decisions, not of which all are universally popular. In facilitating sustainable development, there are a number of drivers of change that must be addressed. We anticipate a continuation of population growth in this state. The department is also the state's demographers, and we anticipate average annual population growth rates of over the next 5 years, of around at least 1.4%, continuing to be driven by overseas migration. The economic downturn has led to a greater focus on employment creation and retention and supporting economic development, particularly in the resource-rich regions of the state. Southwest WA is a biodiversity hotspot, and we need to manage the impacts of development on the natural environment, as well as the environment in many of our northern regions. Managing energy and water use and dealing with climate change are significant further challenges. Communities have expectations of lifestyle options, housing choice, and diversity and urban quality, and we need to maintain these to make WA globally attractive. Housing affordability has been a particular challenge, although Perth has now improved to the third most affordable capital in Australia in which to buy a home. A major challenge is, of course, managing community expectations for input into planning decisions. The view of many in the industry is that the planning system and legislation are fundamentally sound. However, rightly or wrongly, the planning system is seen by a wide range of community and industry stakeholders to be slow and inefficient, with delays resulting in costs being passed on to consumers, overly complex, even for me, in terms of relatively simple applications, opaque. The system is not perceived to be clear, open or accessible. It is not obvious what an applicant has to do to get an approval, and I know because I've been asked. The system is not always appropriate to the need or to the level of complexity involved, and it's inconsistent in that the approval authority requirements may change. In making decisions, the planning system seeks to achieve an appropriate balance between economic, environmental and social sustainability outcomes. Often stakeholders' views of the relative importance of these different considerations varies. Planning is about balancing public benefit against private costs that arise from development proposals, and in an environment where there is considerable community resistance to change, including in a good number of Perth in the suburbs. In late 2008, the state government announced a focus on approvals reform, targeting mining, resources, planning and environmental approvals. I'm pleased to say that my agency had already started on that quest. This, of course, is being led now by the Department of Premier and Cabinet. The Commonwealth Government is also prioritising approvals via the Council of Australian Governments, known as COAG. The delivery of the federal stimulus package is an immediate priority. Schools, public housing, major infrastructure, etc. North Ridge Link and Oakajee will be a focus of state government attention. However, to determine the longer term initiatives and to enable the most effective measures to be targeted, the department released a consultation paper in March 2009. The purpose of the consultation was to seek stakeholder views on the longer term reform priorities. The consultation paper identified six clear priority areas. While priority area number one, simplifying planning approvals, is important, from my perspective, equally important is operational and strategic reform, and it's not just about approvals. Without more effective planning instruments, priority number two, such as policies, plans and guidance documents that provide an efficient framework, approvals cannot and will not be streamlined. The capacity to take a risk-based approach and to allow major projects to be prioritised, as in number three priority, needs to be built into the system. It isn't as at present, and it needs to be cascaded down to any type of approval we deal with. The strategic regional framework creates the environment within which development decisions can be made in context. And it's fair to say that the department's focus has been more on Perth and Peel than any other region in the past. And so has, may I add, the Commission. So development of a comprehensive regional planning framework is priority area number four. The alignment and coordination of infrastructure planning and provision is critical to deliver this framework. Integrated infrastructure planning and coordination is therefore priority number five. But without priority number six, an appropriate governance framework and institutional arrangements, especially the ability to align to common objectives, there will be difficulties in delivering appropriate outcomes. Initiatives underway include providing better and streamlined guidance for for the development of medium and high density or multi-unit housing. We anticipate releasing a draft multi-unit housing code late this year. The department is also working closely with the Department of Housing to fast-track public housing works on zoned land. This is particularly to support the Commonwealth stimulus funding for social housing. A proposed measure that has been supported by industry groups, in particular in submissions to the consultation paper, is development assessment panels. Panels are proposed to be established by the Minister for Planning. Local government and the Commission will be required to delegate certain categories of decisions to the panel. All panels will consist of independent technical experts and local government representatives. The Department also wishes to streamline approvals for the bulk of residential development, that is, single dwellings, by ensuring that the most development requires only a building permit, not a planning approval. This relies on proponents, including architects, designing within the Commission's residential development codes, and local governments not applying additional policy provisions that require planning approval. Streamlining approvals for housing development and other forms of development in Perth and regional centres, as well as for major resource industry projects, is vital. To accommodate forecasted additional population near existing service and facilities, as well as catering for an ageing population, and I'm not targeting you or me, and to provide housing choice and affordability, we need to be more welcoming of housing mix and diversity in all our suburbs. The recently released Directions 2031 Spatial Plan for Perth identifies that of the additional 500,000 households, Perth and Peel will need to accommodate the next 20 years, some 47% or 121,000 new dwellings has been estimated to be required to be accommodated in existing urban areas. Just to support direct growth in the mineral and energy sectors, the Chamber of Minerals and Energy estimated in mid-2008 that an additional 37,500 employees would be needed by 2012, with a further 50,000 indirect jobs. This population increase could have a significant impact on in the Perth and Peel regions, as most would be fly-in, fly-out staff. If your firms are to attract experienced, talented and globally competitive staff to Perth, we need to give them vibrant, attractive and well-serviced suburbs in which to live. This is a challenge, as a sample of newspaper headlines that you can see on the screen demonstrates. Priority two is ensuring more effective planning instruments. The introduction of standard administrative provisions in local planning schemes that would apply to all local governments is underway. The priority measures being investigated include looking at how planning and environmental approvals can be integrated. The development industry has a strong view that this integration is important to avoid dual approval processes that exist at the moment. One of the reasons that approval requirements appear to be so complex is the plethora of policies that apply to development, both from state government, and I include my department in that definition, and from local government. The department with the Commission is working to reduce the policy burden. The KISS principle will prevail. An issue that state government has is how strategic policies such as the promotion of more intensive development near centres and railway stations can be delivered. The state government is looking at options for delivery of strategic objectives through local planning instruments, as occurs in New South Wales. Two new planning instruments that have recently been released are the Directions 2031 paper and the Planning Activities Centre's discussion paper and associated draft policy. Directions 2031 provides a spatial framework for the development of Perth and Peel to that period. the Activity Centres policy replaces the Metropolitan Centres policy released in the year 2000. The Activity Centres policy in particular sees the removal of floor space limit guidelines for centres, and this measure should stimulate economic investment. However, the government retains its expectations that the design and the amenity of centres will be enhanced with further development, and centres will actually diversify from shopping centres to town centres with employment, vitality and, of course, high quality design. Both these documents are now available for public comment until late August in terms of activity centres, and mid-September for directions 2031. Priority 3 is about prioritising major projects. Land and housing projects of state and regional significance has not been prioritised and managed through relevant approval processes in the past. The West Australian planning system has limited legislative capacity to advocate such projects and ensure that they receive prioritised consideration and determination at the present time. To support the Commission's role, the Department is to be lead agency for significant urban and regional land and housing delivery, as are other agencies in terms of other key approval projects. The Development is also considering powers in association with development assessment panels that would allow major land and housing projects which are considered to be matters of state and regional significance, particularly in the regions, to be called in for assessment. Again, this is similar to powers available to planning ministers in other Australian states. Priority 4 is the delivery of an integrated and systematic approach to infrastructure provision and land use planning, especially economic infrastructure. Development of more comprehensive and reliable information land management programs through a new urban development program is proposed. The Urban Land Monitor commenced last week as stage one rollout of a statewide urban development program. Preparation of a state development plan is also proposed to give a spatial context to the state infrastructure strategy currently underway, and will prioritise regional planning needs across government and, of course, in liaison with the private sector. Proposed reforms include the preparation of a whole of state development plan to not only provide the community with a vision for the future, but will also allow for the identification of needs and priorities which can be linked to the state budget processes. This will include investigation of funding sources for strategic land acquisitions, such as infrastructure corridors into new port areas or public infrastructure sites to support major expansion in fast growing regional centres such as Broome. Particularly in the current economic environment, the state will and must make some hard decisions about where to invest in physical and social infrastructure. The state will have to do its own prioritisations and risk assessments in choosing between competing infrastructure requests to support private sector development. The Hopedown Primary School, for example, was built at a state cost of several million dollars for some 140 permanent pupils and is now operating at half capacity. Likewise, other taxpayer-funded infrastructure, including water, sewerage and power, was built in expectation that Hopedown would enjoy sustainable growth as a result of the Ravensthorpe Nickel project. This is an example of the perils of planning for growth in a town dependent on one industry, and in this case, one employer. Priority area number 5 is to focus on the development of regional planning frameworks through the establishment of regional planning committees in the areas of the state under pressure, either due to past or present growth pressures or conflicts in land use. Last December, the Commission resolved to prepare regional planning committees for what it saw as the three main resource pressure regions, the Midwest, Kimberley and the Pilbara. The Gascoyne region, particularly the Ningaloo Coast, has been recently added, and the existing Ningaloo Sustainable Development Committee will be replaced by a committee responsible for planning for the whole region. I might add that to that comment I've just made, I'd add the Geraldton-Kalgoorlie-Esperance corridor as something that's on my radar for greater attention. The development of a strategic vision for Perth, both the metropolitan area through Directions 2031 paper and for central Perth, is necessary. West Australia's future growth and prosperity is dependent on Perth as a capital city being globally attractive as a place to live but also to visit. An aspirational vision is needed to give Perth a global identity, and stage one of this will be delivered through the Perth Waterfront project that was recently handed to this department to deliver, that is, Department of Planning. To target small regional centres under pressure, the department, in conjunction with the Commission and Land Corps, has produced 11 hotspot land supply reports for the centres in the Pilbara, Kimberley, Gascoyne and Esperance Goldfields region. An extract from the Broome Hotspots report is shown here. Broome is likely to be a major focus of development pressure in the next 5 years, arising from the LNG gas precinct. The uncertainty around the employment figures that we are provided, which creates uncertainty for the planning and infrastructure agencies given long lead times. We need accurate advice from the industry on likely employment scenarios, the resident and fly-in, fly-out mix, and realistic timeframes if we are to support resource development with associated urban land and other social facilities. The sixth priority focuses on strengthening the partnership and governance arrangements, one of which I'm very, very strong on. Decisions by the Commission are to be made available on its website, and in-person submissions may now be made to the Commission on certain matters. Partly in light of the Premier's desire to reduce the number of government committees, the consultation paper also proposes that the Commission undertakes a formal review of all its committees and their effectiveness. This is well and truly commenced and has been long overdue. The establishment of a joint training program on the planning system for elected members of local government is also critical to improve the systems of government, governance, planning processes and the associated decision making. The submission period for building a better planning system closed in late May. The department received 110 submissions that we're currently working through and prioritising. I've established a planning reform implementation group with land, housing industry, planning industry and local government representation. The blueprint for reform is envisaged to be released late this month or early August, probably now early August when I return from some leave, with the Minister's endorsement. This will be the new reform priorities, and a work program will be established for their delivery. The priorities will also assist the new department better align with the priorities of the Planning Commission. In conclusion, the messages I have for you today as industry leaders are as follows. Government resources are under pressure, and infrastructure investment to support population and industry development pressures will need to be targeted and evaluated. We will rely on you to give us reliable and timely information about the scale, timing and nature of investment to enable us to plan for population impacts. Planning reform has to deliver more timely and efficient approvals across all developments. And this will include suburban Perth as well as regional resource projects. Thank you for your attention.